Word on Today FM.
Roe McDermott, who you may know from doing movies here on The Last Word, an advice columnist as well in the Irish Times, and Kieran Cunningham, the chief sports writer of the Irish Daily Star, are with us for the week trending. And Roe, given that you were a child when this story was in the news 20 years ago, I'm going to start with Kieran, because last week Padraig Nally died, and the condolences on RIP.ie were shut down because of the comments that were placed, not against Padraig Nally, but other people. So for those who may not remember it, or may not have been familiar at the time, remind us how the whole country was grabbed by the Padraig Nally story of about 20 years ago.
Yeah, I remember this story vividly. Like, it got huge amount of coverage at the time. And it goes back to something that happened at Nally's farm near the village of Cross in Mayo in October 2004. And there was a guy called John Frog Ward who was from the travelling community, and he was an intruder at Padraig Nally's farm, and Padraig Nally ended up shooting him and killing him. And he was initially convicted of manslaughter. He served 11 months in jail, but on appeal there was a retrial and he was cleared.
And it was 11 months of a six-year sentence.
11 months of a six-year sentence, yeah. And it did become a kind of a cause celeb for, you know, in terms of rural isolation, elderly people living alone and being targeted, and also became a cause celeb around the treatment of travellers and the attitudes towards travellers. And I actually saw comments on Facebook during the week around this. You know, for some people in Mayo who, you know, were saying fair play to Padraig Nally, he stood up for, you know, and they were using some pejorative terms as well that you can't use on radio. But I'm actually surprised that such comments were made on RIP.ie. Like, it does seem like somebody I knew died this week, and I was looking at the comments. You know, people do leave condolences. There's a space to leave messages to condolences, and they're usually very well-meaning messages and heartfelt messages, and to use it for verbal abuse of a community is. It's just mad.
Yeah, I think what was really interesting, and again, I wasn't particularly familiar with the case because I was, you know, a teen, but I think looking at it, it's so interesting how we put these kind of cultural scripts onto cases like this, that it wasn't just a case of a man and an incident and someone got killed. It became this story of, is this about elderly people protecting themselves on their homes in rural Ireland when they're isolated, versus are traveller lives valued as much as the lives of settled people? And that debate, of course, that's divisive and emotional, but I think what stood out for me was hearing what was said at Padraig Nally's funeral, and even like their family speaking to him and said that he really thought about this a lot, even when the case was overturned and it was appealed. He thought about this a lot, and the priest at his funeral said he prayed for the Ward family a lot. Like, this wasn't a man who felt like he had gotten away with something or felt like he was standing up for a cause. It was a really tragic incident. And I just think of the family of Padraig Nally going on to RIP, looking for messages of condolences, and seeing his death used to create division, and seeing these racist comments that he wouldn't have stood for. And I also heard representatives from Pavi Point, and they were saying, you know, they were sending condolences towards, so they are obviously appalled by the racism targeting travellers, but saying we don't want to weaponize his death and we don't want to politicize his death at all. So the people doing this just seem to be really, really horrible individuals with really nasty intentions.
Or they just not stick to Twitter or X, or what it's called, and leave RIP.ie alone.
Yeah. It's
go to Elon Musk with that kind of
just
stuff.
People who just seem to be permanently angry, and I think it's like, you might come to this a bit later about the brain rot becoming word of the year, but I think there are a lot of people who've just been, or too much online, and they've been it's led to a kink in their personality.
But do people get too easily outraged? And I'm going to ask you this deliberately, given the part of the country that you originally hail from. When the FAI apologising for making Londonderry in the programme the other night for the Republic of Ireland and Wales Women's International.
Well, you've gone to... This is going to be a first. This is going to be a first, James, Matt, because I'm going to defend the FAI. And I don't think I've ever done that before. I think it's an honest mistake, and they happen.
And come on.
But to explain this, they happen because because I know how things work now. Like if you, a programme has been put together, sub-editors are an endangered species. Like that was being put together by a designer who mightn't even be familiar with Ireland or the geography of Ireland. It probably
could even have been done by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so yeah, or could be art that these days you wouldn't know. And I do know, like I'll just give you a quick example. A long, long, long time ago, I was sports editor of The Star. And there was a court, I ended up getting a solicitor's letter over this, that there was a GAA championship match and there was a player in full flight and he was wearing a pair of skimpy shorts and unfortunately it wasn't just his legs that were in full flight. And the photograph went to the paper and we didn't read it, nobody noticed it. And that went through about five pairs of eyes, including the photographer, it was agency, the person at the desk in the agency and then the desk. But straight away the next day, I opened up the paper and went, oh no. And then the following day you get the solicitor. Like, so mistakes happen.
Mistakes happen, but mistakes can be polluted. And look, if we are saying that journalists need more sub-editors and more money needs to be pumped into journalism to double-check things, I am all on board with that. And I think my editor would agree because they give out to me for using too many commas a lot. But mistakes can be political. And of course,
they can, of course
calling it Londonderry is political.
Yeah,
and
but why would the FEI want to like, especially they were under pressure because there was a big mistake in was it the Latvia game?
Yes, and the mistranslation.
When they used Google Translate to translate Latvian
artificial non-intelligence.
So they ended up calling them like Jimmy Onions or something, like just bizarre names.
Robert the Liar and Dario. I can't even say that word on television. Yeah.
So because of that, I think they should have learned their lesson on that. But I do have a bit of sympathy. Like, I saw James McLean was very angry over this, and he's from Derry and a proud Derry man, and I understand that. But James has protested about a few things, and he's been very right on it, and he's been very principled. But I think you have to recognise somebody made a mistake here. They probably feel awful. And James has made mistakes on the football field. And I always think, remember Gerry Anderson, who was in BBC Radio 4 for years? He's passed away since. But he used to call it Stroke City because there used to be a lot of
Derry, Londonderry.
Derry stroke Londonderry. So he just called it Stroke City.
Well, and the New York Times, remember they had that places to visit and they basically said, oh, Limerick City or Stab City as it's known by locals. And everyone went, excuse me, you've just published that in the New York Times. Are you joking? But they had to issue a retraction and they were very apologetic. And I feel like the FAI could have said, we understand that is a very heightened term. This was an absolute mistake. The person who put it in has been spoken to. And just acknowledge how heightened emotions can be around that. Because the fact that they have people on staff who do obviously use that term in their real life is something that should be addressed.
Ro, I'll start with you in this one because we stay up in the north and I haven't seen Say Nothing yet, the Disney Plus dramatisation of a terrific book by Patrick Radden Keefe, mm-hmm. who I've spoken to on this programme about it in the past and as well some of the other books that he has written. But Marion Price, very well-known veteran Republican,
yes,
is suing over the content. I mean, there is a bit at the end of each thing, isn't there? Gerry Adams denies ever having been a member of the IRA, as he consistently denies. But he's not the one who's upset. It's her.
It's her. And I feel like nobody learned anything from the baby reindeer debacle, that you can't say that this is based on current events or true events and then make very bold statements. And this is basically, the show portrays the murder and secret burial of Mrs. McConnell by the IRA in 1972, and she's of course known as one that disappeared, the group of 17 people who were abducted and killed and secretly buried by Republican paramilitaries during the Troubles. But Say Nothing is this new drama series and basically shows that Marion Price was responsible for the murder, and that is a big allegation. I haven't watched it, but I do think
it's based on these Boston tapes, all of these various a project that Ed Maloney, who I know well, was involved in, and basically setting off so that when people died that the material would be available to give us a better historical record.
Yes. But I don't know, I don't really understand how Disney, who would have the most high-paid lawyers working in the entertainment industry, have gotten into this situation, because of course Marion Price's responses have said, her lawyers have said, like, it's difficult to envisage a more egregious allegation than the one to which has been levelled against her client. and such allegations published on an international scale are not only unjustified, but they're odious insofar as they seek to cause our client immeasurable harm in exchange for greater streaming success. But I will also say, I think there was rumblings of this before the release of the film, and I don't, look, actors have absolutely nothing to do with the writing and should never be responsible for legal issues around it, but I did speak to one of the actors of this show and asked, you know, oh, were people in touch with the real people involved, and they got very cagey all of a sudden. So I think this issue was raised before the release of it. But I also think Mrs. McConville's family,
they don't like the idea that this has been turned into an entertainment.
They're really unhappy with the portrayal of it. Her son called the portrayal of her death as cruel, and Michael McConville, her other son, said that her death is not entertainment, but it has been his and his family's reality for the past 52 years. So the fact that they're not happy with it either is a serious question.
Kieran, what do you make of all this?
Well, there's a couple of things that makes me wonder about the whole story is that Phoenix Law, the solicitors for Marion Price, they haven't issued, they never issued any proceedings over the book. So
yeah.
Is the depiction of in the book different to the series, I wondered? That's something I wonder.
And is it more alluded to rather than explicitly said?
And if you go back to, you remember the being a Leeds fan, you remember the Damned United, David Peace. John Giles ended up very unhappy over his depiction, both in the film and the book, and he sued over it, and he successfully sued over it. And you sometimes are in a minefield when you are fictionalizing
real-life
characters.
When they're still alive.
People while they're still alive.
Yeah. We need to take a break. We'll be back with loads more in the week trending, including that Greg Wallace story. We'll also be talking about brain rot and the Late Late Toy Show tonight and many other things after this. None of us here on the week trending are MasterChef viewers, but I do know it's an exceptionally popular programme here in Ireland as well as in the UK. But one of its presenters, as I think you know at this stage, and we did cover it earlier in the week, Greg Wallace, is in deep trouble as more revelations come forward about his behaviour. And it does strike me, Roe McDermott, that he's like one of these sort of middle-aged men, particularly as he became more famous, who thought he could get away with all sort of nudge, carry-on innuendo without realising or without even caring if he did realise that a lot of people find this offensive.
Well, do you know what I think that really gets on my nerves? Because I, you know, I'm feminist and talk a lot about social issues, and there's always this pushback of like, oh, everybody's getting too stuck up, everyone's going too far. Nobody is complaining about like the constant innuendo on Bake Off, right? Everybody knows it's in good fun and we're just having a joke and whatever. But it's people like Greg Wallace who take that like level of we're allowed to make a joke and then to abuse that, because he wasn't just making jokes. He was walking into rooms and telling people explicit stories about his sex life, making comments about his now ex-wife, make it like explaining what him and his girlfriend were doing the night before. He had a ghostwriter who he sat down and made several advances on and came out, emerged with they had a meeting, he emerged in a towel in a very kind of Harvey Weinstein move, and then made her listen to him explain in detail his sexual exploits. And then there's this cover of like, oh, but sure, we're not allowed to make a joke, or other people have made innuendos. It's not that you're making a joke, it's you're taking advantage of the fact that you are highly, highly regarded, that you're presumed to be the talent, that you're protected in this industry, that you can say whatever you want and then go, sure, I'm joking, and people are being uptight. People don't have a problem with like good faith, silly, lighthearted jokes. They have a problem with sexual harassment, which is exactly what this was.
What do you make of all this, Kieran?
Well, it's kind of depressingly familiar. Like, the, you know, even the details in terms of wearing a towel and he drops the towel. And, you know, there's been some across the media and film, there's been so many different figures who've behaved like this and have got away with it for a long, long time. And the BBC does seem to have recurring problems that are going back decades, like going back 50, 60 years now. That's a new one seems to crop up every couple of years.
It's not exactly Jimmy Savile, but
no,
it's still serious.
No, but it's still too serious. And like BBC Director General Tim Davey said he'd like to ban the word talent to refer to presenters. And I remember around the whole RTE affair last year, this came up a bit as well, you know, around the talent. And you
but in fairness, though, there was no suggestion of any sexual issues in relation to anyone in RTE.
Absolutely, but very different situation. But I think, but what I'm getting at is when you differentiate the talent, in inverted commas, from the rest of the workers and the rest of the staff, And often the rest of the staff are treated like dirt. Like you go back to the Jeremy Clarkson incident where he hit the Irish producer. That they are these people are given the run of things. They're treated like gods. And they end up acting like gods.
And there was actually, in retrospect, no real consequences for Jeremy Clarkson. He just keeps bouncing back and everyone goes on, oh, they're trying to silence him, they're trying to cancel him.
Yeah, he's probably one of the highest paid columnists in the UK, I would think.
But that power dynamic is at the heart of these issues, because his ghostwriter, he had hired her, there was an NDA, so she couldn't talk about what they were talking about, so she didn't really have anyone to report this to. But it's also that he was making comments to people who are contractors, who are freelance, who are much lower on the totem pole. So if they feel uncomfortable and then bring a complaint, they know that the way the systems work, he is going to be protected, and they mightn't be punished explicitly for speaking out, but they just mightn't be invited back to work. Mm. And so that's their livelihood. And this is where power dynamics and security and this idea exactly of holding talent up on a pedestal is so dangerous.
I'd imagine this sort of behaviour happens in many workplaces. I mean, the other night we were doing a piece on what's allowed or not at, say, Christmas parties. Mm. And somebody made a good point coming in that the amount of women in particular, younger women, who have to sort of ha-ha laugh off, particularly lads in their 40s and 50s, who think they're great fun and that they're great, it's only a bit of banter, it's only a bit of crack. And because of the power imbalance, junior people feel they can't say anything about it.
Yeah, and I think, as Rose says there as well, I think especially now because there's such a lack of security with young people in jobs, young women in jobs, most of them would be freelance or in short-term contracts or part of the gig economy, doing different gigs. And I think they don't feel they are able to stand up for themselves. And also it's very fashionable now not to be in a union. You know, a lot of these very trendy industries don't want unionized labor, and so it doesn't. That lessens the power that these people have as well.
But also, if you're working with people who have repeatedly shown that they are sexist, that they are comfortable making other people uncomfortable, I think the defense of Greg Wallace and his friends, his so-called friends, have been really interesting, because they've been saying, "Well, he's just a working class guy, and he was making jokes." I'm sorry, there are plenty of working class people who don't sexually harass people, so even that comment is appalling. And his
what about his comment then that it's middle class women who were the contestants on Celebrity Versions?
Middle-aged women of a certain age who are all making the complaints, which again just inherently shows his sexism, his ageism, his disrespect of women generally. But I love the responses now, because a lot of the women who have come forward with complaints have said, yeah, you know what's amazing about middle-aged women is that their memories are long and they don't take any crap.
Yeah, but here's what it says.
That's fantastic.
And this comes, I'm a woman and I can't see anything wrong with Greg Wallace making sexual jokes. He didn't abuse anyone. People can't have a laugh anymore.
You can be a woman and you can support people who sexually harass people. That doesn't mean that you're correct. And again, he wasn't just making jokes, quote unquote. He was describing in detail what he was doing to his much younger girlfriend, to women who were working on his shows, who were guests on his shows, who were freelancers. That's not a joke. That is inherently sexual harassment.
Another listener says his behaviour is predatory and using sexual language is unacceptable. He's done and has to go. Let's move on. Late Late Toy Show is on tonight, which is probably one of the most important nights for RT, for audience and for revenue. And what is it that we're expecting tonight?
There's a Home Alone theme happening, so there's going to be the usual singing, there's going to be dancing, there's going to be a lot of references to Wicked. There are rumours of kind of a big Wicked Oz-based number, which should be good fun. But there are rumours going around about the guests who might appear. So first of all, Paul Rudd is in Dublin at the moment. So people are
saying, He's filming something, isn't he?
So
was he in Home Alone?
No, he wasn't, but he's a celebrity and he's in town, and he is Ant-Man. Now, I will say there is a scene in one of the Avengers movies where all the kids are running up trying to get a photo with Hulk, and Paul Rudd's Ant-Man is like, "Do you want a photo with me? I'm Ant-Man." And they're like, "No, I'm fine." And I think that might be the attitude of children towards Ant-Man generally.
In fairness, Paul Rudd is very funny across a whole range
delightful.
Of movies.
I don't know if children are as obsessed with him as adults, but the other rumour is, because it's Home Alone themed, is if Joe Pesci will appear, because of course he was one of the burglars in Joe Pesci in Home Alone. But I don't know if children are sitting down going, "Do you know Joe Pesci from Goodfellas and My Cousin Vinny? Love him, dying to see him on the Late Late Show."
Could you have Joe Pesci on after what he once said to Sinead O'Connor?
Yeah, it goes back to when she tore up a photograph of Pope John Paul II
on Saturday Night Live,
Saturday Night Live, and I think. Was he on Saturday Night Live the following week?
The week after.
And he said if she was on tonight, I'd punch her for doing that. Something along those lines.
If I tell you one thing, she was very lucky it wasn't my show, because if it was my show, I would have given her such a smack. Yeah. And I don't think there's ever been a public apology. So if he's on the Late Late Toy Show...
It's an opportunity for him to apologise.
In front of all the children.
Okay.
I do suspect, given the Olympic year, that there will be some Olympians in... And I wouldn't be surprised if Rashid Adeleke is in.
Okay. Brain rot is the Oxford word of the year. Brain rot is two words, though, surely,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
So it's a phrase of the year, but maybe are we putting rot onto brain? Anyway, what does it mean?
It's the exact opposite of the experience anyone has listening to your show, Matt.
Thanks very much, Rob. Good one.
Defined as the supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially viewed as the result of overconsumption of material, now particularly online content, considered to be trivial and unchallenging. And I actually think this is really, I know brain rot, I think it's a good phrase. I think it was originally coined by like Rousseau or Descartes or somebody. It was like an old phrase, but it's about basically doom scrolling and scrolling through nonsense.
I actually think
this is so much more prevalent now because TikTok has of course become huge, but also YouTube Shorts are the next competition, and Instagram Reels. And what they're designed to do is they're designed to keep you scrolling through short content, and you could easily watch 20 videos that range from like 30 seconds to a minute long, and two of them only might be vaguely amusing or something that's of interest to you. But because it's called intermittent reward, if your brain says, oh, I have to scroll this long to get something, but I do get a reward, so you keep scrolling, and then you're an hour in going, what the hell have I been watching?
That's why I recently deleted Instagram from my phone. Your last word in this, Kieran?
Well, just on this, like one of the words that was included recently was Riz, and I never knew Riz comes from charisma. Like I've heard people say they use this word Riz, I never knew that. But another one I came across very quickly, I was doing a piece during the summer around Dublin GA, and I'd heard C-Matt wore a Dublin jersey and shorts in a concert in Ferry Park. So I asked somebody, could they check? And I got back and I was told she wore a yassified version of it. I was going, what the hell does that mean? You could explain, Ro, I have no idea.
Yassified, she's slaying, she's killing it. All of these words you don't understand. She looks great.
Ro McDermott, Kieran Cunningham, thank you both so much. The last word on Today FM.